When you buy an asset, let's say you buy an apartment building, you're not just buying the land and the walls. You're also buying a bunch of appliances. You're buying a bunch of ceiling fans. You're buying a bunch of garbage disposals and a bunch of flooring and all these different assets. And according to the IRS, those assets can be depreciated at a much faster rate than 27 and a half years in that example. So carpet, for example, should be depreciated over 5 years. Your appliances should be depreciated over 5 years. But when you pay $2.8 million for it, you don't know how much of that $2.8 million is for refrigerators or garbage disposals. And so that's what a cost segregation company does, is we come in and we segregate those costs into different buckets.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Eric Oliver is the managing director at Cost Segregation Authority and has worked with clients across the country, saving significant tax dollars. Eric brings with him a passion for identifying cost savings and educating real estate investors. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sam. Glad to be here.
Pleasure's all mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you tell me in 90 seconds or less, where did you start, where are you now, and how did you get there?
Yeah, sure. So my background is in accounting. So I majored in accounting, never really wanted to be a CPA. I was just, numbers always came easy to me and I'm horrible at English. And so I said, hey, I'm going to go into a math degree. So I have an accounting degree and my background is in sales. I've been in sales for the last 20 years. And so was looking for a job. I lived in New York for a long period and wanted to move back out west and was looking for a job and came across this company. They've been in business for about 16 years now, and I thought it would be a good fit with my accounting degree and my business development background. And so I joined their team, been here about 6 years now. Wow. And loving it. Love helping investors. I got to be honest with you, it's the easiest sales job I've ever had. It's a math equation. It either makes sense or it doesn't, right? So I love that aspect of it and glad to be here with this company.
That's fantastic. I love that. Yeah, your sales job, I would only imagine, is pretty easy in the sense that it's like, hey, by the way, I can help you save loads of money and it'll cost just a little bit upfront. Like,
right. That's exactly what it is. It's, you know, you can give me $4,000 and I'll save you $40, or you can pay the IRS $40 in April, you decide. And so it's really more of a consultant position, which I love, is just kind of walking people through how this works and exit strategies and, you know, different investment strategies that we see with the investors we work with. And so that's the part that I really love. It's not like I'm trying to convince somebody they need to do it. It's more of a consulting, and love that aspect of the job.
Great. We've certainly had several different firms come on the show and talk about cost segregation. We've dived, I mean, like you said, English isn't our strong suit. Whatever we did, we got into those, you know, kind of some of the nuances of cost seg. And, you know, that was a good time. But just in case our listeners haven't listened to that episode, can you give us just bite size, what is cost segregation?
Sure. Cost segregation is just accelerated depreciation. So when you buy an investment property, you get to depreciate that over either 27 and a half or 39 years, depending on the asset. And so you're taking 1/27th or 1/39th of that, the building price, in terms of depreciation over those course of years. And all we're doing is saying, well, instead of taking 1/39th of your storage units, what if you could take 30% of the deductions in the first year and spread out the rest of the 70% over the course of the next 38 years? And so there's a number of reasons why you would want to front load your deduction. You know, you've got time value of money. A big one right now is inflation. You know, a dollar today is worth more than a dollar yesterday or even an hour ago. So there's a number of reasons why you want to front load those deductions. Give me my deductions today. I'm not going to hold my storage unit for 39 years. So give me my deductions today. Let me put that money to work on my next storage unit or whatnot. And so that's really what we're doing, is front loading depreciation deductions.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's really your point there, that a dollar today is worth more than a dollar for tomorrow. Not tomorrow's dollar is worth less than today's dollar. That's one thing. And the other thing you pointed out there is that, you know, if you have a 39 year deduction. Yeah, you have that. I mean, by the time 39 years from now, I don't really plan on, I mean, minus passive income and assuming I'm still alive, like it doesn't make any sense to pay taxes. Like, I'm in the highest earning tax bracket right now.
Right.
You know, the more deductions I can, as a personal, either a passive investor, get on my K-1, or even an active investor,
right,
the more deductions I can bank today, the better off really I am in the long term. That's really fascinating, you know. But with that, one of the topics that we haven't spent a lot of time digging into is, one, most of us don't hold these properties for 39 and a half or 39 years or 27 and a half years even. It's just not the way this, and there's a few people that say, I want to hold this in perpetuity. Okay, good for you. But the normal business plan is 5 to 7 year hold on a lot of these larger commercial assets, because we all bring in investors and then we got to make them their pile of money and give them their money back. So what happens then? Like, one of the things we haven't dug into is depreciation recapture. I mean, sure. It just seems like, are you just trading dollars at that point? And when you pay the tax, what's that look like?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. We get that asked, or get asked that quite often. And I'll kind of just back up a little bit, just to shed a little bit of light for those listeners who aren't familiar with how we accelerate those deductions. What we're doing essentially is when you buy an asset, let's say you buy an apartment building, you're not just buying the land and the walls. You're also buying a bunch of appliances. You're buying a bunch of ceiling fans. You're buying a bunch of garbage disposals and a bunch of flooring and all these different assets. And according to the IRS, those assets can be depreciated at a much faster rate than 27 and a half years in that example. So carpet, for example, should be depreciated over 5 years. Your appliances should be depreciated over 5 years. But when you pay $2.8 million for it, you don't know how much of that $2.8 million is for refrigerators or garbage disposals. And so that's what a cost segregation company does, is we come in and we segregate those costs into different buckets. And the reason that's important is, think about it. When you buy an asset, going back to your question on recapture, I'll kind of back into this. But if you buy a building, let's say you buy an apartment building for $5 million and you hold it for 5 years and you sell it 5 years later for 10, the market's great. You've doubled, the value of the property's doubled. You sell it for 10. When you go to pay taxes on that, if you don't do a cost seg study, you're telling the IRS that everything doubled in value. My land is worth double. My walls are worth double. And guess what? So's my dirty old carpet that I've had for 5 years. It's now worth double what I bought it for 5 years ago.
Right.
That's just not the case. Carpet doesn't go up in value. Carpet goes down in value. But when you have everything lumped together as one big asset, that's all you can do is say, well, this asset I bought for five, this big asset I sold for 10. So everything doubles in value. When you do cost segregation, you've got everything broken up into different buckets now. And because we have it broken up into different buckets, I can say, what are my five-year assets worth after owning that building for 5 years? They're worth zero. They're fully depreciated, right? And so you're not selling your carpet for more than what you paid for it. You're selling it for zero. It has zero book value in that example because I've owned it for 5 years. And so when you do cost segregation, it allows you to manage those recapture taxes. And essentially what you're doing is you're taking your deduction at a high rate, taking it against that high 37% federal income tax, you're taking your deduction at 37%, you're paying back a portion of it, and that portion is dependent upon how long you own it. You're paying back a portion of it at a lower rate at a future date and saving the spread. And so when you're paying that back, if you're paying it back at a capital gains rate of 20% and taking the deduction at 37, even if you're paying it all back, you're still saving that 17% spread. Right. And like I said, in actuality, you're not paying it all back because in that example, your five-year assets are fully depreciated. So you're paying no recapture on your five-year assets. And so you're only paying parts of that recapture at a lower rate. And so that's one of the side benefits. I don't know if it's a side benefit, but it's one of the secondary benefits of having a cost segregation study done is give me my deductions now. But then when I sell the asset, I'm able to manage the allocation of my sales price. Again, that's important. Manage the allocation of your sales price and put that into the right buckets, which allows you to reduce your total tax bill upon sale. And so hopefully that wasn't too far in the weeds, but I think, you know, the main point there is you're not selling your carpet for more than you bought it for.
Right.
Take your deduction at a higher rate, pay back a portion of it at a lower rate at a future date and save the spread. And that's really what we're trying to accomplish.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's an interesting clarification that a lot of people don't have when, you know, when they're being sold these investments, when you're talking to passive investors.
Right.
You're like, hey, you know, 100% bonus depreciation, 100% this, like blah, 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 cost seg. They don't tell you that, hey, on the back end, you're going to capture some of this again. It just might be at a much lower rate. So, I mean, and again, you know, for a lot of passive investors, they care, but they don't care in the sense that right. It's like, I'm coming to you to put a deal together to make me money. And you're getting really in the weeds there, Sam. So
yeah,
just send me my K-1 and tell me what it is. Let's go.
Right. And that's something too, that we talk to investors about, or just something to keep in mind in terms of cost segregation. And when you're putting these deals together is, depending on the structure of the deal, your depreciation doesn't have to be divvied up equally amongst your investors. I mean, you can put in your operating agreement that, you know, you might have some investors who are high W-2 earners and they're not real estate professionals and they're just looking for a place to park their money and they don't necessarily need the tax deductions or can't utilize them.
Right.
Versus some investors that are bringing money to the table, all they're looking for is a tax write-off. And so right. being able to kind of mix and match with your investors what you're giving them in terms of tax write-offs by utilizing some of these cost segregation strategies is key to finding new investors and being able to provide for them, you know, what they're looking for, whether it's, are they looking for equity long-term or are they looking for a tax write-off in the short term? And so it's one of the added benefits.
Right. No, that's a great point. Yeah. Because I think about, you know, self-directed IRAs, you know, Roth IRAs, things like that, that I have. And I mean, the deals we're in that I use myself, I don't need the, you can give me all the write-offs you want. I don't care.
Like, you don't care. Yeah.
No, it doesn't do me any good. I wonder if that, you pose an interesting thought there, which is not part of our onboarding process right now. But I wonder if that's probably a good question to put in your investor questionnaire as they come on board. Do you need the depreciation benefits or the cost seg benefits right. as we, like, is this something you can even use?
Right.
If not, we're going to have our accountants funnel this to other, or, you know, split it up evenly amongst the investors that do need it.
That do need it. And maybe they, those who don't need it, maybe they have more equity in the deal or whatever, however you want to structure it. But yeah, give them what they're looking for. And it does help when you're raising money to be able to tailor your offering to what they're looking for and what their needs are.
What's a good way to explain cost segregation or depreciation to an investor? Because I mean, I've got a lot of people that this is such a, especially non-business owners.
Right.
It took me a while to wrap my head around like, wait, so I'm going to put money in, I'm going to make money, and then I'm going to lose money.
Right. How does this all work?
First grade math tells me this doesn't work.
Right.
But yet it does. So what's a good way when talking to investors, do you think that people should be saying, hey, this is maybe no, someone's never heard of depreciation or bonus depreciation or
sure.
cost seg? Like,
you know, depreciation, it does take a little bit to get your head around, but it really is a non-cash expense. So when you think about business, we have income and then we have our expenses, right? So whether you're manufacturing widgets, you got to buy the parts for the widgets and those are your expenses. And then you sell those parts, that's your income. And your income minus your expenses is obviously your profit. And depreciation is just a non-cash expense. It's no different than, you know, people at the end of the year, they go out and buy a truck to try and get a write-off. Depreciation is the same, in effect, the same thing. It's just a non-cash. And the other way to look at it is everything deteriorates over time. And so basically, if you think about, you know, sometimes people say, well, why are commercial properties 39-year assets and residential 27 and a half? And the thought process there is that when you've got somebody living in a building 24/7 or potentially there 24/7, where you've got a commercial building that's open 9 to 5, that commercial building is going to last longer. All the stuff in it is going to last longer than something that's being used 24/7. And so we've got these different depreciation lives, and there's court cases where all these depreciation, you know, someone said at one point there was a court case that said, you know, my carpet doesn't last 39 years. And so I shouldn't be depreciating it over 39 years. And so then the court said, yeah, you're right. Carpets, you know, only last 5 years. And so carpet now has a depreciable life of 5 years. And so that's really all it is. It's just the depreciation and how long does it take that asset on average to basically become worthless. And so if you had a commercial building, let's say you had a storage unit, in theory, if you owned that storage unit, you built it and owned it for 39 years and never maintained it, after that 39 years, it would be worth zero.
Right.
And that's kind of the thought process behind it. And so because of that, you get to take these write-offs because every year it's worth a little bit less and a little bit less in terms of the structural value, not necessarily the market value. You know, obviously things go up depending on the market, but the structural value goes down. That siding is now 5 years old. And so it's not worth as much as it was when you put it on there original. And so I don't know if that was an easy way to describe depreciation, but hopefully.
No, I think that's really good. Talk to us about bonus depreciation. There's a lot of concerns coming down. You know, you see the chatter on the internet machine and it's all, you know, hey, your bonus depreciation's going away, blah, blah, blah. Can you tell us quickly what is, just for our listeners, what is bonus depreciation, and talk to us about the sunsetting of it and kind of what's happening on that front?
Sure. No, that's a great question. So bonus depreciation has been around for a while and it's kind of a way the government has used depreciation to stimulate the economy. And so they have, you know, depending on how they, in the past, depending on how the economy was going, they would either increase the bonus or decrease the bonus on what they were trying to accomplish. And what bonus depreciation is there, I think originally bonus depreciation was set up to not for real estate. So when you think about bonus depreciation, it was on assets that have a depreciable life of 20 years or less.
Right.
So the idea was, hey, if you go buy a new truck, we're going to allow you to take 100% of the depreciation in the first year versus spreading that out over X amount of years, whatever the depreciable life of a truck is, or a bulldozer or a piece of machinery.
Right.
However, when you think about cost segregation, when you buy a 27 and a half year asset and you do a cost seg study, now we're coming in and we're segregating into 5, 7, and 15 year buckets. Well, those 5, 7, and 15 year buckets are all under 20 years. And so now they're eligible for bonus, right? And Trump knew this, Trump being a real estate investor, and we won't go down that rabbit hole, whether you like him or not, that's up to you, but he is a real estate investor.
Right.
And when he rewrote the tax laws or the tax codes, he was very favorable to real estate investors, and he understands how bonus depreciation works. And so he extended bonus depreciation the end of next year. So any properties purchased between September 27th of 2017 and December 31st of this year, 2022, are eligible for 100% bonus. And what that means is that when we do a cost seg study, all the 5, 7, and 15 year assets that we identify, instead of depreciating your 5 year carpet over 5 years, you know, you get roughly 20% every year for 5 years, you get to take 100% of that in the first year.
Right.
And so this is big because when you buy $1 million asset, we typically segregate somewhere around 30%. So all of a sudden you're getting a $300,000 write off in the first year with bonus depreciation.
That's nice. And even if you don't use that, the entirety of that write-off that year, that write-off carries forward until you've used all of it.
Correct. So, yeah, you don't ever lose it.
So what happens to the sunset? When is this going away? Because I know there's a phase out. They're phasing us out on this. What is that?
Yeah. And so exactly. So they were talks about, you know, with the new administration coming in, were they going to keep this 100% bonus in place or were they going to get rid of it? There was talks about them getting rid of it. So far in the stuff that's been proposed, bonus depreciation has not even been mentioned, which is great. And so the current phase out period is it's 100% for anything through the end of this year. Now that's any asset you buy through the end of this year. So let's say you don't do a cost seg study on an asset you bought this year. You don't do the cost seg study for 2 years. You're still eligible for that 100% bonus.
Got it.
The law applies to the time you purchased or put the building into service.
Sure.
So anything you buy between now and the end of the year is eligible for 100% bonus. And then starting anything purchased in 2023, it starts to phase out 20%. So now you get 80% bonus. So now if you've got $100,000 worth of carpet, for example, you get to take $80,000 of that in the first year. The $20,000 then gets played out over the next 4 years.
Right.
And so same thing with your 7 and your 15-year assets. So it starts at 100, next year goes to 80, the following year it goes to 60 until in 2027, it's down to zero. And that's assuming nothing changes. But, you know, we still have a couple good years of quality bonus depreciation available to us. So definitely keep that in mind as you're investing and looking at different properties.
Man, this is fantastic. Eric, thank you for taking so much time today to really break down even further nuance into cost segregation. This is, I don't think we've got quite gone this deep on some of these more nuanced parts of this, especially the sunset provisions there on bonus depreciation. That's something that I think our listeners will find very, very helpful because there is, again, like you said, a lot of chatter around it. So yeah, that's been absolutely fantastic. Last question for you. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, do business with you, learn more about you, can you tell us the best way to do that?
Sure, absolutely. So our website is just costsegauthority.com. That's C-O-S-T-S-E-G authority.com. From that website, my contact information is on there. Please use me as a resource. If you have any depreciation questions, feel free to call me. If you've got child tax credit or earned business income questions, please don't call me because I can't answer those. But anything depreciation related, we're kind of a niche accounting firm. We just do cost segregation. So I'm trying to think, the weirdest question I think I've been asked is how to depreciate mule deer for a breeding farm in Wisconsin. They were breed these deer, and believe it or not, deer have a depreciable life of X amount of years. And so we got that question. I didn't know the answer to that right off the top, but I was able to find the answer. So if you have any depreciation related questions, 100%, please feel free to call me. My email's on there. My phone number's on there. From our website, if you do have properties, we do a free benefit analysis on your property, and we'll give you an idea of what the fee would be to do the study, as well as what your expected tax savings would be. So feel free to reach out to us that way. It's been great, Sam. I appreciate your time. Glad to be here.
Eric, thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day.
All right, you too. Take care.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.